Yes. It's up.
Let there be music.
It's up. We always have a little bit.
There's music.
A little bit of. Oh, this is what a day to start. We had to, I just saw Steve Bertrand. Hello, good morning. I'm done talking.
No.
We had technical difficulties yesterday, and I was a little crabby about it.
Boy,
and
I didn't notice that at all.
I'll save the world.
Were you?
I don't like technical difficulties.
Right.
And
well,
it's not Jasmine's fault. It's not Matt's fault. I don't know whose fault it is.
The man.
But people blame me. They think it's my fault.
Why?
You should have had the fader up.
I did. But we're switching from a live remote to
Wendy,
here.
We live in a day and age where people have a whole jukebox worth of music on their cell phones. If people want music, they can just press a button and hear Simply Red. And everybody's happy.
Thank you for making me feel better. All right.
Everything's back to normal. You want to start over? You okay?
Yeah, let's start
over. Start over.
Hit a theme. Anything. But do it.
That's better. Don't you feel better now?
A little sultry.
Very sultry.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. My throat hurts now. Made a deep voice noise.
All right, well, welcome. You know, yesterday I thought it was Thursday, so I'm happier today.
I've noticed that's a trend with you. Whatever day of the week it is, you always think it's a day or two different.
I'm a little askew because of the Memorial Day we had off.
Right.
Was so it Memorial Day
be like
or Labor
that
Day?
Until Labor Day now.
Yeah. It was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, but I'm just kind of catching up.
You'll figure it out. I was thinking today, as I'm sure you're aware, as everybody's aware, today is the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion in Normandy. So what they've done is they've brought a bunch of the guys that were there originally 75 years ago. They have brought them to Omaha Beach today, and they're walking on the same ground, the same exact place that they were 75 years ago. And I was thinking to myself, I don't know how I would handle that emotionally.
That's a great question.
I've been in a bunch of places where I was at during very happy times in my life. I mean, this is a very happy time in my life, but I mean, at key moments in my life, I've been back to those places. Sometimes they're vacation places. Sometimes they're places where I met my wife or maybe my daughters celebrated a birthday or something. And the flood of emotion from something like that is so much. You go, wow, I can't believe it's been 5 years or 10 years or 20 years. But imagine being where you were 75 years ago when that event was so monumental, so frightening. I mean, everybody who experienced it will tell you that, you know, they knew that their life could end at any moment. And there you are on the exact same soil, not reliving it, but just taking in the real reality that, wow, this is exactly where I was 75 years ago when ... happened. That must be overwhelming.
Yeah, I can't even imagine that. And I have probably what's going to be considered a very dumb question.
What is that?
Why is it called Omaha Beach? Do we know that? And wasn't there a Utah Beach, too? I mean, why are they U.S.-related things?
I think that is a good question. It probably was, you know, designated by the invading soldiers, you know, or by the, you know, the general saying we're going to call. I don't know. I'll see if I can find out for you.
All right.
Was it the name of the mission or something?
Like a code name or something?
Possibly.
Because I was thinking about that, and I, you know, it just wasn't clicking with me. Like, you know, that's not here. That's Normandy. Why is it Omaha?
Right.
And there's a Utah Beach, too, isn't there? And I started thinking, I don't understand.
So, give me a French name.
They are referring to it as a code name for the operation.
For the mission itself.
Uh-huh.
So up until that time, that particular tract of land was not referred to as Omaha Beach. It wasn't until the mission took place, Steve. Do we know that or not?
Oh, right. I'm sure that's true.
That's
right.
Okay.
According to Quora.com, which is a website I sometimes frequent, consistently throughout the war, the Germans used code names, which gave a clue about the purpose of the operation. Operation Sea Lion was an amphibious assault.
Uh-huh.
Odin was a one-beam system, blah, blah, blah. The Allies learned and employed innocuous code names. Omaha and Utah are American geographical references, but neither has a beach. In addition, the name of all five beaches, Utah, Omaha, Juneau, Sword, and Gold, all have distant pitch sequences and sequences of vowels, stops, and glides. This is getting more confusing now. But, they were code names.
I'm certainly no historian when it comes to things like this, but I do remember from reading about it back in school, in high school, that this was considered one of those missions that was so pivotal that had things gone the other way, the outcome would have been cataclysmic.
Yeah.
You know, it was a battle that we really needed to win. And, you know, as dangerous as it was, and I'm sure everyone knows this, but a lot of guys went into this knowing it was essentially a suicide mission, that their chances of survival were slim and none, and still you have that in you if you're doing that particular job, that's what I have to get done. So, you know, a debt of gratitude that can never be repaid goes out to those men who fought such an incredible battle.
That hurts my heart to think about that.
Oh,
it just really does, and tears are coming into my eyes.
And the age of these guys, these are guys who were literally 16, 17, 18 years old. Think about yourself at that age. And
think about my son, 16 and 20, they would have been there.
Yeah.
Maybe 16 not. Was it that young?
I think 16 was the draw line, I believe.
All right. Listener Bill, radio talk show host Bill, meet each other. Bill, you think you know why, or you do know why it's called Omaha in Utah? Because I'm confused.
Yes. This morning, I drive truck, and I was listening to our satellite radio this morning, and there was two, they called them designers, that worked with Eisenhower in determining the invasion. And one of them was from Provo, Utah,
mm-hmm.
and the other one was from Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, that's the name.
Now, as far as Sword and I can't think of the other two now.
Juno and Gold.
Yes. Now, they didn't explain that, but they explained that about Omaha and Utah this morning on our satellite radio we listened to. Sorry, I was out of range.
No, that's all right.
Oh, that's okay. You don't have to apologize. But we appreciate the information.
Well, you should apologize. Get the app. You can listen on the app.
But then we wouldn't know the answer.
I don't want to listen to the traffic on the Eisenhower when I'm in Pennsylvania.
That is a good point.
Send Mary the road. She'll check them for you.
Yeah, I'll do that.
You can get a personalized traffic report.
Give me a satellite. I'll go anywhere.
Now, I grew up in Northwest Indiana, so I go way back. Of course, we listened to WLS back in those days.
Yeah.
When the music was going. Yeah. I did, too. I got to be honest with you.
They're closed now, Bill. You know that, right? They closed up shop.
Oh, yes.
Years ago.
Well, they're on FM.
You know, you should have hung up 2 minutes ago.
Bill, we appreciate this very much. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Bill.
Okay.
Have a good day.
All right, one of the five beach code names, as we learned during the invasion, Omaha, Utah, Gold, Sword, and Juno. Utah is least talked about, a USA beach. It had the least amount of fighting thanks to the 101st Airborne Division, Easy Company. They fought a battle called Brecourt Manor, knocking out the guns in that sector. Omaha gets the most attention because it had the most casualties.
Oh, that makes sense.
Most historians put it at about 2,000. USA Beach, and then Juno was primarily Canadian beach. Sword and Juno were primarily British beaches. That's really interesting.
Yeah. One of my teachers in grade school would do a thing every other month where on the board it said D-Day really big in big letters. And what that meant to her was D stood for desk day, as in it's the day of the month or the every other month that we're going to clean out our desks. And I know you've accused me in the past of overthinking things, but as a kid, I would think, this really is a disservice to anybody involved in D-Day to refer to the day that we clean out our desks as D-Day. We should probably come up with a better name for it than that.
What grade was this?
Fourth or fifth grade.
I didn't probably even know what D-Day was then.
Oh.
The Catholics taught you better.
My guess maybe. My guess is most of the kids there probably didn't understand it either, but I knew just enough about it to know it's really not fair to compare to the day that we're cleaning out our desks to what went on in Normandy.
Did you bring it up?
No, I left that one alone.
That's one you left alone.
There were other days, Steve, that I challenged authority, but not that day.
Starting in fifth grade is when he started challenges.
That's where I drew the line, right there. All right, we'll take a break. We've got plenty of show for you. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN. I have to ask Mary Vandeveld a question, if she's available. Mary, are you available? I'm going to take that as a no.
She might be recording.
Might be recording. Does she have a podcast, a traffic podcast?
Aleph Garris, the producer for the John Williams Show, has a new podcast. We'll be talking to her at 10:30.
I need one.
You should do a traffic podcast.
No, don't.
Like on this day 3 years ago, there was a big. What?
She has more to offer.
I'm snoring.
Come on.
You're
should do,
come on.
Like a video workout or running video.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah.
That would be great.
Or I could do a ballroom dance one.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what was that? Not Lilius Yoga and me.
Lilius Yoga and you, I think, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was speaking in the first person.
Oh.
I don't know. Not that, but there was like the 10-minute workout or something. Was that on TV or something? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Kind of.
They had a woman. I don't remember where it was other than it was a woman in a leotard.
Kiana?
No. This was in the 70s, and they would like zoom in on her glutes.
It wasn't Jane Fonda, was it?
No, it was like the 10-minute workout or something.
And
please,
who ran it?
Somebody remember this and call 312-981-7200.
Where was it airing?
It was either on TV at an old boyfriend's house that I saw it, or it was Channel 11, which is kind
Channel
of
11?
A big spectrum there.
Yeah.
But it was like the 10-minute workout, and it was this woman, and she had like a leotard on
every day,
I think so.
And it wasn't Lilius Yoga and you.
Know, I think my mother used to watch that.
It was honest to God. The camera would zoom in on just body parts.
Oh,
not really. I mean, nothing.
Then I'm
going to
cross PBS off the list.
This wasn't a pay channel. No,
I don't remember.
On TV was pay channel.
There weren't
though.
Any channels, so it could. It must have been on OnlyFour.
Right.
I thought it was like a UHF thing.
Maybe it was.
Channel 32.
It's like okay, we're going to jog in place. It was the 10-minute workout, and then it would be slow motion and the camera would just be on her buttocks as she was jogging.
I will tell you right now, I bet no one watched that show I didn't finish for exercise.
It's because a lot of women wore dresses too.
All right, is Carla on the line? Carla may bail me out here. Hi, Carla, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Do you know what I'm talking about? The 10-minute workout or the 20-minute workout?
It was the 20-minute workout, and I can't remember what channel it was on, but it was kind of sexual because they would always zoom in on the women's butts and...
That's what I'm saying!
Yeah.
I don't know why I watched it, but I did!
Was this how Les Moonves got his start? Was this his first foray into television?
All right, so you remember this. You don't remember the channel, but it was the 20-minute workout. I did the abbreviated version, of course.
You always sat through 10 minutes?
Yeah. And it always had like three girls and they do squats and all that. And the one girl, she had like this long black poofy, curly hair.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. I got pictures of it up right now.
All right. So I am not making this up. The 20-minute workout, that's what it was called?
Yeah.
Yes.
So.
Every day, Monday through Friday. At what time, Wendy? This was early in the morning?
I don't remember what time.
I don't remember.
You were at a boyfriend's house?
I don't. It depends.
Early in the morning? What were you doing there early
in
the morning?
Shut up. It depends on when it was on. If it was early in the morning.
She looks like the girl in Flashdance. What's her name?
Jennifer
Beals. Yeah, she does look like Jennifer Beals.
They were super fast workouts that burn fat, tone muscles, and keep you healthy.
Yeah. Carla, did it work for you?
I never did it.
You didn't do it. Okay, all right.
But we watched it. What's wrong with us?
And Bess and Lori.
Again, I'm telling you, I'm looking at these pictures. No one watched this for exercise.
But I can't believe you and Bill Left do not remember
this. I don't remember. How long? It looks fairly recent.
It was in the 70s or 80s. Do you remember what era it was, Carla?
No, I don't, but I think you're right, Wendy. I think it was like late 70s, early 80s.
It says 1980. There's a YouTube one posted in here, and it's 1980, and it's Ann, Bess, and Lori.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So Wikipedia says first episode June 83, and then it ended June 85. In 85.
And it doesn't say what channel. There is a warning on it, too. The following program depicts exercises, which, depending on your physical condition, may be hazardous to your health.
Sure. I'd give you a heart attack
better
for watching.
You are therefore warned not to attempt any of these exercises without consulting your doctor.
Wow.
Even with such approval, each exercise should be done in moderation and should not be performed if tired or to the point of fatigue or pain. Do not overexert yourself. That was the warning before.
Well, they called it high impact aerobics back then.
Right.
Yes.
But this was very innovative because, I mean, now it's commonplace to see this type of show on television, but not back then, not in the early 80s. That hardly ever happened at all.
All right. I have some audio because I think it was. Do you remember? They didn't talk or anything. It was just
your heart. Scientifically developed, the 20-minute workout offers the maximum aerobic benefit in the minimum amount of time. Begin slowly, working at your own
pace. We should warn people, do not attempt what you're hearing. It's dangerous.
To set your goals for improvement. Be patient. Like any exercise
very sexual.
Program,
very.
It takes a while to learn the routines. Just try to do a little more each day. Give yourself enough room to move.
Carla, are you bopping
it.
A little bit at home?
Jogging shoes.
Just a little bit?
Am I what?
Are you bopping just a little bit to the music?
Yeah, just a little.
It's hard not
just
to.
A little.
So this would have been the Jane Fonda era, right? With her
and Richard Simmons' Anatomy and, Asylum.
Right. And they wore the gym shoes, and they always did lunges, deep lunges to the right and left with their, you know, tops like hanging out.
Yeah. With the leg warmers.
the leg warmers and the gym shoes.
All right, well, Carla, I'm glad you remember this, because I can't believe two girls remember this and two boys don't.
No one told us.
I know.
I was in college at the time, so.
I was in denial.
Carla, thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, and I love you both very much.
Thanks, Carla. We love you, too.
Thank you.
Have a great week.
Yeah, this you don't remember this?
I swear I don't.
It was just, and then they'd zoom in a little closer.
Yeah.
And seriously, they'd be doing jogging in place, and you would see the gluteus maximus like rippling as they bounced up and down.
And it was Canadian produced, so I don't know.
That explains it.
Yeah, I don't know what you...
Maybe
not
I'll
really.
I'll try to binge watch it or
subdued.
Something. Yeah, you would think in Canada they're so polite.
Really?
All right.
Sorry, you were going to ask Mary something.
I'll ask Mary later on in the show, because I do have a question. Mary, don't go home yet. I have a question for you before you leave.
All right. Another hour.
A lot more ahead. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
This is the theme to Elif Garris's life. Is it
to your
life
Elif?
Theme?
Is it?
Yes.
Wow.
I'm taller than you when I don't wear heels.
Elif Garris is with us. Elif is the executive producer of the John Williams Show here on WGN. How's John doing?
He's doing much better. He'll be back today.
All right, good. And you have put together, you've been writing, what, since high school, since you were a little girl?
Yeah, I've been writing in general since high school. I've loved it. And then in college, because I love music, I decided to combine the two passions and write about music.
Oh, perfect.
And now
perfect.
You have a blog?
Yes.
What's it
Let's
called?
Let's call it a column.
I don't know what to call it.
Professional.
What's the difference between those two, Elif, for people who don't know, like everybody?
A blog is like something that people just throw online and hope people read, and then...
But thought goes into a column.
Exactly.
All right. I'll buy into that.
It's called Radio Elif.
Oh, coincidentally, your name.
Exactly. Isn't
that
weird?
Nicely, yes.
Yeah.
And where can we find it? The WGNradio.com website?
Yes.
All right, so when you say you're writing about music, what does that mean exactly? Are you writing about new music, old music,
you look
a combination?
Like you're conducting an orchestra.
I'm using my hand a lot today for some reason. I don't
and a
know
pen.
Why. Yes, right. So from the oboe section, answer my question, please.
You kill me every time.
Thanks, Elif.
You're welcome. I write music or concert reviews.
Oh,
that's my
excellent.
Focus.
Very good.
Yeah, and I sometimes interview artists before the concert or the I'll profile artists.
Name drop a little bit. Who have you talked to so far?
I've talked to Caravan Palace.
Nice.
Who's that?
They are the band that you just heard playing.
Oh, okay.
And who else? I've talked. Now I didn't write.
Blanket
this down.
On the names.
That happens all the time. It's like your brain goes somewhere else when you're
ready,
put on
though.
The spot.
So when you're asking these bands or performers questions, is it like about their motivation or about their history? What kind of stuff are you getting out of them?
I want to know why they write the lyrics that they write and what they want their audiences to feel when they hear the songs. When I'm writing concert reviews, I want to know why the audience bought the ticket to go to the concert.
Oh, I love question. It.
Right?
Very
and
solid.
So, because I want to know what part of the music resonated with them, and that's why the artists write their music in the first place.
Sure.
Right, they're just telling a story to music.
Exactly.
And they want to tell that story. Those are great questions.
Yeah,
are these
thanks.
People receptive to your questions?
In the bands, yes. Usually, actually, they usually have a similar response to you, which is like, wow, this is, you're asking me... Like the truest, you're asking me for the truest part of this song, and sometimes I'll try and find out what it is from based on their interviews from the past, but it's not always in there. It's sometimes it's very technical what they get into.
Have you ever heard lyrics to a song and thought to yourself, boy, this isn't at all what I thought the song was about? I thought the song was about a certain thing, but now that I've studied the lyrics a little bit, I couldn't be more wrong. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes. I'm trying to think of an example.
But I know that it seems, and I could be wrong, that younger people than us, Bill, and maybe it's just me, when I listen to a song, I can tell in like 10 seconds if I'm going to like it. That's my first opinion of it. Like, oh, God, I like the beat. It's catchy. Sure. Then I listen to the lyrics. And I think people who consume music now, the lyrics speak to them quicker than they did to me years ago. What are your thoughts on that?
I completely agree. I think, so there's a song by Queen, actually. We were just talking about them. It's called The Show Must Go On.
Mm-hmm.
And in the lyrics, you just hear The Show Must Go On. You just keep hearing those words. But after I saw the movie, the biopic, I just kept listening to that song and really listening to the words that he was singing. He says, inside my heart is breaking, outside the dawn is breaking, but inside my heart is breaking, something like that. Now, I sing this song, and I forgot what the lyrics are.
I know. Again, when you're put on the spot, you forget.
Yeah, but...
Is Wendy intimidating you? Be honest.
I think you are.
Is it me?
With your Steve Bertrand glasses and your conductor's wand.
Hey, you look good. So, you know what I've noticed about lyrics is they're much more specific now, in that they will mention... Like, I met you at the Starbucks.
Oh.
Something like that.
Starbucks wasn't around in the 60s.
No, but they're using brand names as part of just the lyric.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just a much more specific way of saying things.
Okay. So I have a really good example that just reminded me about.
Mm-hmm.
Kimbra, the singer that was actually here not that long ago, has a song called High Def Distance Romance. And that song is about... a long-distance relationship she had that failed, or that ended, I should say. And she literally talks about the pixels in the Skype images that go in and out,
right,
and how it makes it so hard to communicate with your loved one
who is
miles and miles away.
Yeah.
And she was so specific about it. I was like, I'm writing about these words.
Right.
So that's a really good example.
Perfect
Steve.
Example. Yeah. Has music changed dramatically in the last 20, 30, 40 years, do you think? Or is good music still always going to be good music?
Well, when I was a teenager 30 or 40 years ago,
I'm
like, wait a minute, that's not right.
I'm waiting for you to crack a joke.
No. You're ageless and timeless. When you were a teenager.
Last week.
Yeah.
I think that we have gone back to using synthesizers a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll hear a lot of like warpy sounds in music. I just saw Empire of the Sun last Saturday night. And what they do is there's one part where like you feel like you're in a spaceship because it's like shaking you, mm-hmm. the sound of the synthesizer. And so that's something that they relied on a lot back then.
Yeah.
Another thing is, guitar solos don't seem all that prevalent.
I know, and it needs to be brought back. I'm sorry, that's the true classic rock and roll where you always had this awesome guitar solo. It's like guitars aren't used that much anymore. I know they're part of the band, but that's not what the focus is.
I think bass is more...
It's all about that bass.
Is that true, Wendy?
Yeah.
I think
you should write a song about that.
All right.
That would be excellent. Can you stick around for a little bit?
I sure can.
All right. We'll take a little break. Elif Garris is here. She's talking about her column. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Be afraid of the cold, inherit your blood. A brain deluge after meet the flood. Be afraid of the lame, they'll inherit your legs. Be afraid of the bold, they'll inherit your soul.
I wonder who that is singing and playing piano, Bill.
I know.
Who is that?
It's Elif Garris, our guest, Wendy. She's a producer for Walk of Fame, John Williams, over on WGN.
Walk of Fame.
That's gone right to his head, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's why
he doesn't show up for work anymore since he got that honor. It's crazy.
Right.
Elif is a columnist. She writes about music over at WGN Plus, Third Coast Reviewer. If somebody asked you the questions that you're asking other musicians, what would your answer be? Why are you doing this? Why are you writing lyrics and singing and things?
Because those specific artists that I cover are resonating with me in a way that nothing else does.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but when you hear something or when you smell something, when you touch something, it makes you feel, when you smell something, it reminds you of something from 20 years ago.
Sure.
Right? You immediately, it's like a snap in your brain. You go, I was in Paris in July this year, and I remember my mom was wearing this perfume.
Mm-hmm.
And
everything is a bridge to something else.
Exactly.
Right?
And that particular song is by Regina Spektor. It's called Après Moi.
Means after me.
Correct.
In French.
Yes.
Oui,
yes.
Oui.
I'm good.
Okay. We'll just stay in here then. And in the song, it's very empowering. And I learned it when I was in college. And I went through a really depressive phase when I was in college for like numerous reasons. I was fine, but I just went through this weird.
Did music get you out of it?
Yeah.
It did?
Completely.
Really?
Singing just was freeing for me. And
proven those studies time and time again, like brain injuries, sometimes Alzheimer's. It's like people hear a song and something clicks. It brings them back to something.
It's dementia. Yeah, yeah. And Alzheimer's.
Yes.
Exactly. There's a documentary on that. I forgot what it's called, but
you should write about that in your next Radio Elif column.
That's a great idea.
There you go.
Interview people on
music
that.
Music soothes the savage beast. I just thought of that now. No one else has ever said
God,
that.
Oh, my God, I
That's
love
from
that.
Me.
We
yours.
Should ask Elif a question so we could play this. It's
What is that?
That's the Siri Elif version.
Oh, that's you doing that on John's show? I thought that was real.
No, that's the real.
Wait, that guy's not really Thomas Jefferson who's on the show all the time either? No, that's real.
Spoiler alert.
That part's real.
Come on.
All right, and
real.
We just got a text when we said guitar solos are not really happening anymore.
Is it from your son, Michael?
No, it's from your brother-in-law, Kevin Richter, our former producer, who said guitar solos are not dead. You just have to look in the right places. And
they
then
still
I called
exist.
Him a Rush lover, and we moved on.
Oh,
that's
man.
True.
Can I ask you a music question? Because I don't know, I don't know enough about music to understand this.
Yes.
But I notice every once in a while in a song, and I'm going to use Imagine Dragons as an example. You know them,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wendy, this is a bunch of dragons from Game of Thrones got together, formed a band. They're very popular. All right, so they sing a song called Thunder, and then all of a sudden you hear this. Listen to this.
Pick a number. I was lightning before the thunder.
Thunder.
Is that a mosquito? Who's singing that?
It sounds Elf like, and the Chipmunk.
It sounds like they got a mosquito or a chipmunk to jump in with the Imagine Dragons. Instead of guitar solos, they're now training mosquitoes?
That's the bridge right there that you're listening to. Yeah, and the dragons got together and they found their mosquito friends
and they all
put them in a studio. And
the rest is history.
So is that categorized under auto-tune or is that
auto-tune,
just...
Auto-tune, big time.
Why is that so popular? To me, that is just a crutch to fall back on.
Mm.
I agree with you. I don't like auto-tune and... You know, I...
Cher started it. Did you know that?
Well,
do you believe?
Yes. You can blame Cher.
I remember the day I first heard that with my sister and my mom. We were in the car at the shopping mall in England.
Yeah.
Listening to that song going, what is this? Is this a man or a woman?
It's so crazy.
Right.
I hate it.
Right.
It's no Gypsies, Tramps, and Thieves that she sang so wonderfully before.
She doesn't need the auto-tune. It's very upsetting.
All right, we are running out of time. You want to read an excerpt from your latest Radio Elif, is that, or just one of your favorites?
It's my Regina Spektor review. Yes. So, all right, a little bit about what I told you before, but this is part of this review. I found two things most comforting in my late teen years, and those were my piano and the music that I chose to listen to. Après moi is a song whose story, I believe, reflects on Spector's experiences of moving to the United States when her parents escaped Russian anti-Semitism. While I can't relate to that particular experience, I can confidently assert that that song is about persistence in rough times, both physical and mental. That song lived in my head as motivation for several challenges I faced through college, and sooner or later, emerged from my own fingertips and throat. Once I learned the song, I played it repeatedly, belting the words so I could heed them myself.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
And as proof that you wrote and did things in high school, one of your supervisors from, I believe, LTHS is on the line. Is this Mike?
Yes, he is.
Is this Mike Baker?
Happy birthday, Ellis, one day early.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my gosh.
So how did you first get interested in radio?
I started doing radio in high school.
With WLTL.
WLTL. And Chris Thomas was my teacher there.
And he's still there.
Yes. And Mike Baker's family actually helped get me through college with a great scholarship.
Awesome.
Yeah.
That's so,
so thank
nice.
You for that.
Well, Mike, we love that you're listening. Why aren't you listening to WLTL right now?
it's automation.
Oh, it's on automation.
Yeah, computer.
Right. Wendy and I just sent a demo tape over, fair. Mike. See what you can do.
Well, thank you for calling.
Thank you, Mike.
We really appreciate it. He's proud of you. My son worked at WLTL. What a great way to learn how to be on the radio. And you did some writing back in high school. Did you read? You read things on WLTL. Was it music reviews or was it something different?
We would just listen to music and shoot the crap about it.
Oh.
But that's a radio show.
Right.
That was a good way for us to make friends. And there was a writing portion. We would write stories about, we just write fiction stories for the show, one of the shows that I did. And again, the writing passion comes through.
Good. It shows.
You can find it on WGNradio.com. It's Radio Elif. And what would you do on the John Williams Show if you had to wrap up a guest because we have to take a commercial break? How would you tell him that? She's doing the signal.
Right.
Wrap it up. Elif, it's so nice to hear from you and to have you on the air with us. We can find Radio Elif. Where's the best place to find it?
WGNradio.com. Thank you for having me.
It's all double-spaced? No?
Just so that you can see with those new glasses.
Thank you, Elif. Thank you.
Thanks, Elif.
Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand. He is sitting pretty in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.
Can I thank Steve really quickly? Thanks, Steve.
Well, you're welcome, Bill.
One of us is appreciative.
Well, I appreciate your appreciativeness.
All right,
Bill.
Get a room. Or just get a four-hour nap place.
All right.
4 hours.
Cheaper. You're getting a whole night.
Do you have to get the whole 4 hours?
Yeah.
Well, you have to pay for 4 hours. How long you stay there is up to you. Not that I know.
They don't refund any of the money?
No.
That's selfish.
Don't look up. All right. There is some exciting news in the world of Legos. And, Bill, two of our worlds are colliding. You like Legos?
Yes, I do.
I like space. Did you hear the new figure that people voted on?
No.
The International Space Station has won the honor of becoming an official toy in the Lego universe.
That's outstanding.
It is so cool looking. I have an app that shows you the constellations and all the different stars out there. And it shows you where the International Space Station is at any given moment.
Uh-huh.
It's so cool. And it's shaped very uniquely.
Oh,
and
that's going to be hard to make that stand up. Because it looks like it's floating in space. How will they make it stand up?
It's going to look kind of like a TIE fighter. Or what,
let me see.
See, it's just...
Oh, okay. They'll put it on a stand of some sort. All right.
But the orbiting outpost topped a fan vote of more than 22,000 Lego enthusiasts to be the Danish toy company's next real-life spacecraft to be made into a toy brick model. The space station received more than 45% of the votes cast, 10,438 votes to be exact, in the Lego Ideas 10-year anniversary poll that was held May 20th through June 4th.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was trying to find out what the other options were.
What did it beat out? It doesn't say.
I can't.
I wonder.
I can't figure that out. But my question to you is, what would you like to be a real life depiction of Lego bricks? Like,
oh, that's a great idea. Anything? That's a great question. Well, they've already made, and I'm showing you this, Wendy, not to brag, but to just show you, I have in my wallet the Lego VIP club card, which is
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I have a 16-year-old son, and he has a high school ID. Yeah. He has a yearly pass to Galloping Ghost Arcade.
Yeah.
And we'll put pretty much anything in there to make him feel like an adult.
Yeah.
But he does
he
not have
He doesn't have a
that.
Lego VIP card, does he?
Not even at the ready to just pull it out at a moment's
notice. Keep
that
notice. In the front of my wallet just in case I have, you know, if I get pulled over or something. You can show the police officer this, and then they, you're on your VIP at the Lego Club. You're on your way, sir. Sorry for bothering you. I get a lot of that.
Never has your wife been more proud.
Right. And I've given her plenty of reasons over the years, but no, that would be the winner on that. Yeah.
When I was saying I wanted to talk about Legos, you were kind of like, oh, okay, whatever.
I play it off as not being a big deal, but Legos, you know, they're the official brick of the world.
They are really cool. And didn't they do a whole, I've been to Legoland, isn't there Legoland over in Schaumburg or something? We did that.
There is.
Loved that.
Yeah.
There's an actual Legoland, isn't there?
Well, there's amusement parks that they have in Florida and California. Yeah.
And don't they make like the Sears Tower and various?
They make a small version of the Chicago skyline.
Okay.
The Micro Series.
Do you have that?
I do not have that. But I have the Death Star. I have Cinderella's Castle from Disney World. I have Hogwarts. The whole giant Hogwarts. It's amazing. I got a bunch of them. They're very therapeutic to
My
build.
Brother-in-law,
very.
Shag, likes to do Legos,
it's
too.
So great.
Now, do you leave it standing up? Or,
yeah.
Okay, he doesn't have, you know, places to display it like you do.
Yeah.
So he will put it away and put it in the box.
The
and
details,
tape it shut.
Just amazing. When we were kids, I mean, Legos have always been Legos, but they didn't have the licensing like they do now for Star Wars and Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings and stuff like that. So, yeah, they're so much fun to build, fun to look at.
All right, I did find some more information. The space station's competition included a scale version of Nathan Sawaya's Art of the Brick sculpture, Yellow.
I don't know what that is.
A set of miniature Sega arcade machines. Oh, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
Or a model of Disney's animated alien Stitch. The Stitch came in second place to the International Space Station.
Now, they've done that before with other characters. Like, I've got a Yoda that's like 2.5 feet tall that's all made out of Legos.
Braggart.
So, yeah, I guess I'm rubbing it in your face. I apologize. But, yeah, so they've done similar things like that. And then every once in a while, you'll go to a toy show and somebody will have built like a human-sized Batman or Superman or Spider-Man.
It's unbelievable.
I saw a Darth Vader that was 6.5 feet tall, but not for sale, unfortunately.
I know, but how long does that take them?
Forever.
You're combining all the sets. I know that when the kids were little, and I'm sure it's still like this, if you're missing a piece in a set, you can order just single pieces.
Right.
But so they have the Chicago skyline. I would have loved to have gotten the Tribune Tower. Wouldn't that have been cool?
Nice. Well, like
or
I said, that would have been nice to be immortalized in Lego. Would have been nice. They do a bunch of cityscapes that are micro series. They're very, very small, and each one has like 3 or 4 or 5 of the buildings that you think of when you think about Boston or Philadelphia or whatever, and Chicago's got that going.
But there's no like bigger version of the Sears Tower or the John Hancock. I refuse to call them by their new names.
At the Lego store on Michigan Avenue, they have some Chicago landmarks that are built up that are about a story high. You know, they go floor to ceiling, and they're really impressive. I think they have the Water Tower. I'm trying to remember what else they have. I think they may have... is Sears Tower there?
I thought it
was. Willis Tower in brackets.
I'm not calling it that.
You refuse? I think it is. I'm pretty sure it is. But you can't buy those kits. They just did that for the store.
Oh, okay.
You know?
But is there the Eiffel Tower?
There is.
Okay.
Yeah.
That seems...
And then they've also done a thing where they do like representations of different TV show sets. Like they do the Big Bang Theory living room, which is really cool.
The Simpsons, I'm sure.
They do the Simpsons house and the Quickie Mart. They do the Batcave from the 60s version of the television show, which is really nice.
I can see why you're a VIP.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you. Well, let me just say, I haven't had to buy a drink in a long time, because if you go to a bar and people know that you're a Lego VIP, yeah, we're not allowed in, but if we were allowed in, I bet we would never have to buy a drink. They would just buy them for us.
All right, well, the International Space Station, the ISS Lego model, is compact but detailed, and that one out over Art of the Brick Sculpture Yellow.
Mm-hmm.
Which was basically, I would imagine, a giant yellow brick, just bigger.
I don't know enough about that one.
God, how do you put that together? Like, do you ever do a jigsaw puzzle when it's all the same
right.
color? It takes you forever.
Right.
How would you do?
Well, the Death Star was all different shades of gray. Like, all the pieces were just different shades of gray,
yeah.
And that was tough.
Yeah. Or a Stitch from
Lilo and Stitch.
Yeah, and I'm surprised that wasn't out there already.
Hmm.
And the little Sega arcade machines would be cool.
That would be fun. That would be fun.
Sega.
They're doing the house from Stranger Things. So you know the show, so you know that they have what they call the upside down.
Yeah.
So the way the Lego structure is built is the top of it is the house as it normally is, and then there's a mirror image on the lower half.
I love
that. That's like a dark gray version of it.
Are the Christmas lights up?
Yes, in one of the rooms.
Oh, that's pretty
cool.
Yeah,
it's really nice. All right, a quick break, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. Mary, I do have to ask you a question, but before I get to your question,
I just want to give a little love to Brookfield Zoo. I worked there for a long time, and a listener texted me and said there's brick safari going on right now. There are over 40 life-size animal structures, or sculptures rather, made from millions of Lego bricks. Over 40 of these life-size animal sculptures, they have an elephant made out entirely of Eggos.
Legos, not Eggos.
Now that would be something.
Yes.
A giant waffle made out of
that
Legos.
That would be amazing.
There's a panda, a giraffe. These are life-size creatures made out of Lego bricks.
And these were built by the animals, Wendy? I didn't hear that part. They are?
That's called amazing. Brick Safari, and it's going on now through September 29th, so I will be going to Brookfield
Zoo
to
like
see
fun. It looks like a good time. Mary, are you decent?
Excuse me?
Yeah. All right, I have a question.
HR.
Puffin stuff.
Yeah.
I can play that game.
No.
All right, here's a question. I don't watch the Country Music Awards, but you do, right?
You've no.
watched. Oh, you don't watch them?
No,
oh.
Sandberg is into
them. Sandberg's the music one. Yeah, no, I saw they were on last night, and I am not a country music fan.
You're not.
All
right.
No, you should have had, maybe Elif was.
It seems like they have Country Music Awards nearly every week.
That's
what
I thought.
Possible,
you know,
right?
I'm going, you know how there's nothing on TV right now to watch because all the seasons are over and blah, blah, blah. So you have to go to Netflix or something and find something interesting to watch. So I was looking at what my recorded show. And looking at shows that were on, I go, oh, the CMA Awards are on. Must be a rerun.
Right.
Must be a re-showing because...
They just had Country Music Awards like a week or two ago.
They have them constantly.
Always.
CMT, right? Country Music.
CMA, CMT, CM this, CM that. I'm like...
This was CMT.
Okay. I just ignored it because I thought it was already on.
I know that Carrie Underwood
won
a bunch.
Yeah.
But at some point...
Can we call her Carrie Underpants because it's just fun?
Yeah, we can call her Carrie Underpants. That's fine. Zach Brown won, and I don't know if that's a band or a guy.
It's a guy.
Is it a guy? All right. So then he came up and he made a speech, and he was very angry.
Why?
That's a good question, Wendy.
He told fans to.
We have audio of it.
Mm.
We've bleeped out.
All right, thank God.
The more important.
It's a band, I thought. Isn't
it? It's a band called Zach Brown.
Band?
That's what I thought.
It's been around forever.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah.
All right, so here's part of Zach Brown coming up to accept either his award or their award, depending on if it's a guy or a band. And like I said, he was very angry.
For you young artists, have courage to stand up against the machine, be yourself, work hard, and one day you can stand up here and tell all the haters to f*** off.
That's no way to behave.
No, I get what he's saying, but that, I mean, come on.
Why so angry, Zach Brown band or guy?
Well, he's Zach Brown, and the band shares his name.
Oh, they stole that from Van Halen. That's what Van Halen did. You can't steal from those guys. I read an article on MSN where they asked the same question. It said, Zach Brown, representing the rest of his bandmates for the hit song Someone I Used to Know. Now, that's not the Gaudier song from years ago, is it? Remember he had a song like that, too?
Yeah.
Somebody Goethe? I used to know. No, not Goethe.
Dick Gaudier?
Not Dick Gaudier. He gave an emotional acceptance speech during Wednesday's broadcast, it says, and then they reiterate exactly what he said. And then it says, fans immediately took notice, with many asking why the singer is so mad, which is the same question we're asking. Do we have any idea why he's so upset? They won. You shouldn't be upset if you won.
You
should be overjoyed to win. Very confusing. Also, you know how you've asked me in the past, how come Ed Sheeran never has his own brand of ketchup?
I have asked you
Remember,
that
a couple times.
Times
a week,
yes.
You'll call me at home, and I'll, Wendy, it's 3 a.m, I'm sleeping. What is so important?
You never have an answer for me.
And you say, Ed Sheeran is so popular, why doesn't he have his own brand of ketchup? Listen to this story. Heinz announced yesterday that it will continue its campaign against classic ketchup. Oh, maybe that's why Zach Brown's so upset. Maybe they like ketchup and they're upset. And it says, Ed Sheeran is getting involved. It seems the singer is really, really in love with ketchup. In fact, he even has a tattoo dedicated to Heinz ketchup. Was that a good move? I don't know if that was a good move.
If he wanted it, it was a good move.
But instead of just enjoying ketchup like the rest of us, Ed Sheeran had to go and put his name on a bottle like he's some sort of a ketchup tyrant, it says here. The world now has Edchup.
Oh, I like it.
The egomania doesn't end there. A quick scroll through his Instagram feed reveals that he actually approached Heinz first with this idea. Here's what he said by way of a Instagram message. Yo at Heinz. I don't speak the language. I don't speak Twitterese. I have an idea for a TV ad if you want to do one. If not, I won't be offended. I could never be mad at you, he captioned a photo back in April. Slide in my DMs or have your people call my people. Do we know what that means? Lots of love, your biggest fan, X, said Ed Sheeran. It's distasteful, and to announce it on National Ketchup Day of all days. This is one bit of good news that I can offer, though. The Heinz formula is the exact same, but the only thing that is special about this particular brand is that the name Edchup, E-D-C-H-U-P, is on the label. Would you be more inclined to buy ketchup if you knew that Ed Sheeran was somehow involved, or less inclined?
I probably wouldn't even notice. I mean, right. I really buy Heinz. That's my favorite ketchup.
Right.
Although I used to buy Del Monte catsup.
Oh. And you switched
over
because?
Heinz is just the one you see in restaurants most frequently, and I got used to it.
Yeah. By default.
Del Monte's a little sweeter.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
You know, whenever I'm in a ketchup situation, I would always opt, like in a restaurant, if they say, would you like us to bring you some ketchup? I always go with either barbecue sauce or A1 steak sauce. I like ketchup.
But for French fries?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I need it.
Ketchup always?
Are you a dipper, or do you put it on top of your fries?
Dip.
Yeah, me too.
Yep.
My sister, as I was growing up, was trying to tell me, you know, you put ketchup on top of the fries and then just grab them like you would for nachos.
No.
And for years I listened to her. And then
she's wrong.
When I turned into an adult, I realized you have been giving me wrong information.
That's bad information.
You need to dip.
Yeah, because then you get the exact right ratio.
Yes, otherwise they get soggy.
Yeah, yep.
I need ketchup on a burger. And must
you wouldn't do steak sauce? You wouldn't do barbecue sauce? No.
I mean, I would do steak sauce on steak.
Yeah,
but
it's not just for steak anymore, Wendy.
If you grind up steak and turn it into a patty, in your steak burger, So hey,
yeah, but I don't want a steak burger. If I want steak, I'll have a steak. I want a hamburger with ketchup, mayo, mustard, pickle, onion,
the standards,
lettuce, cheese, of course.
I drive them crazy at a certain fast food place because I tell them no pickles.
You don't have to say the name of the place, but does a guy in a crown come out and yell at you, David?
No, it's the other one.
Oh, all right. A clown? Does a clown come out and yell at you?
I will tell you.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
No.
I was at this gourmet burger place, and I'm not going to give the name because they're really good, but there's a slight problem with their delivery. They make their own ketchup.
Yeah.
And their ketchup.
Places do that?
Yeah, and I've been told I can't sneak a squeeze bottle of Heinz in my purse. They won't let it. I don't know if that's true.
Told you that?
That's rumor going around. But they make their own ketchup, and the burger is outstanding.
Yeah.
And the fries are really good. But when you go to dip the fries in this ketchup, it's a combination, and I'm probably way off, but here's what I'm tasting. Cinnamon.
Cinnamon and
nutmeg.
Ketchup? Really?
It's like orange, and it's not good. And now I won't ever go back to the place.
It's they very ambitious of them.
I'm sure with a family, you can find a way to sneak that ketchup in.
But I shouldn't have to. They should, like if you ask, do you have ketchup? They say, oh, we make our own. I think they should give you the option.
Of saying thanks, but no thanks.
No, of saying...
I don't want your ketchup.
No. They should give you the option if you want regular ketchup or our
just
homemade
have
one.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just for people right. who yeah. are... Yeah, right.
Because it was really one of the best burgers I've had, but I won't go back because they don't...
I can't imagine them being ketchup. So upset with you that they wouldn't let you bring your own in, though.
Yeah, you know why they wouldn't?
Why?
Again, my son told me this, so I don't know how true it is. Yeah. But he said if some other table sees you with ketchup on your table...
It'd be anarchy.
Well, then they're going to say, hey, can I have the Heinz ketchup? And they're going to go, we don't have it. Well, that table has it.
Right.
Well, it's, you know, a lot of places have BYOB. It should be BYOK.
You know, just look. Do it on the down low.
Sneak in your ketchup.
Yeah.
You can sneak it in, Wendy.
Yeah, but then it makes that
put it in a
noise.
Flask.
But is
put it in a flask.
Ketchup flask. All right, we'll take a break.
You are an entrepreneurial
I'm an idea
wizard.
Man. I'm an idea man. That's what I am. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get you some news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about Hardpoint. Dean
Richards, ladies and gentlemen. Dean, how are you?
I'm airport horrific.
Are you at the airport as we speak?
I am. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Are you going to New York?
I am going to New York.
Wendy and I, we would like to guess the airport. Just hold the phone up so we can hear a little bit of ambient noise and we'll guess the airport you're
okay.
at.
Okay.
All right. Wendy,
holding it up right now.
All right. Let's listen in.
That's O'Hare.
I'm going to go Meg's Field. Is it?
Bill is so old school.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Bill was a little confused because he heard bulldozers in the background.
In the middle of the night.
Right.
What are you? Why are you headed over to New York? What's going on there?
There's a little movie that's called Shaft.
Shut your mouth.
You're talking about Shaft.
He's a bad mother.
Yeah.
Samuel L. Jackson stars in it this time.
I love him.
Along with the original chef, Richard Roundtree.
Richard Roundtree. Woo!
Yeah. I'll interview both of those guys tomorrow. And Regina Hall and the rest of the cast. And we're doing it. And I guess they shot a lot of this film in Harlem in New York. And we're going to be going to a lot of historic places in Harlem tomorrow to do the interviews. So I'm kind of looking forward
That'll
to that.
That'll be fun. That'll be a good time. I'm sure you already know this, Dean, but I would love to hear your thoughts on it. A new Batman has been named.
Yes. It's Robert Pattinson from the Twilight movie. Mm-hmm. So he's gone from being a vampire now to a bat. If I was him, I would get a different agent. Kind of like diversify some of the roles that I'm getting.
He only plays bat-related characters.
Right. Yeah, if it doesn't bite, he doesn't bite.
I just read he signed up for the Louisville Slugger story. He wants to be the lead in that too.
To be a bat in that
movie.
Yeah,
he's going to be a bat in that one.
It's very nice. Very nice.
Now, other actors who have played Batman in the past have said, "Boy, it's really tough to play Batman. You might want to rethink this." Why is that? Why do so many former Batmen come forward and go, "Nah, it's not a great job"?
I think there's just so many expectations on this role now. And there's so many people. It's like, you know, one of the most talked about topics of conversation, who was a good Batman, who wasn't a good Batman, you know, in the movies.
Who was your favorite?
For my money.
Yeah.
I'm a Christian Bale man.
Me too.
Yep.
Bill?
He was good. Yeah. As far as the movies go,
the voice
Christian
was
Bale.
Bugging me though.
Yeah. He had a raspy voice.
Yeah.
He needed some Sucrets. Correct.
Uh-huh.
Somebody should have given him a lozenge. There should have been, in that utility belt, there should have been some bat lozenges.
A lozenge dispenser.
A lozenge, right. Well, I also liked Michael Keaton. Also,
I did,
but,
too.
Yeah, Christian Bale was my favorite. I could have done without George Clooney. Could have done without Val Kilmer. Who am I forgetting? Am I forgetting
Ben Affleck? Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
He shouldn't have even done it.
Don't you think, though, that the key to playing Batman is really playing Bruce Wayne? Because with Batman, most of your face is covered. It could be anybody in there, but the key is playing Bruce Wayne, don't you think?
I do. I think that's exactly it. And I think that's what made Christian Bale so great, is that he was a great, and Michael Keaton, too. They were both great Bruce Waynes. But with Christian Bale, even under the cowl, there was such depth and dimension to his performance of determination and sadness and loneliness.
Yeah,
and, all the things that made it great. All on top of that fantastic voice.
Isn't it interesting, though, that so many of our iconic comic book figures, even though they're American-based, they're oftentimes played by British or Australian or similar actors? Isn't that crazy? And this will be another case of that. Robert Pattinson, of course, is British.
Yeah, can't they, leave us with a few of our own? Do they have to come here and take our jobs? Is that something really that... maybe the president or the speaker of the house, maybe they should be working on that, preserving some jobs for Americans.
Right.
Those good old American heroes. One of the stories that I had this morning is Patty Jenkins, who is the director of the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
And will be directing the new Wonder Woman movie that, by the way, comes out exactly 1 year from today.
Oh.
Wonder Woman 1984, it's called. She released the first image for the new movie. It's a poster, very multicolored, kind of psychedelic looking poster. Gal Gadot is not American. Is there any more of an iconic American image than Wonder Woman?
Yeah.
And really, we couldn't find an American actress to play that role?
I want to agree with you, but I have to say, she was really good wasn't it? I don't know how you could have done better than her.
She was good. She was. I'm just trying to preserve American jobs.
Yeah, right. Right. That's your campaign. I'm with you.
I like to buy American. In fact, I'm going to start taking points off now on. Now that I think of it, I've just decided that when I start reviewing movies, if you're not American,
yep,
and it's a quintessentially American role,
yep,
I'm going to knock a couple of great points down.
Right. I'm behind you 1,000%, Dean. That's great.
Right, and if they open on the 4th of July weekend, especially,
yeah,
I'm going to trash your movie. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to trash your movie, especially if it's the 4th of July. And
you got to take a stand, Dean. You're doing the right thing. Dean Richards taking a stand.
We are America.
Yep, that's what we are. We'll take a quick break, and then more of Dean Richards as he tells you what movies are coming out this weekend, what to see and what not to see. Stick around. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, we are also talking to Dean, and he is ineligible for the Father's Day Steak Fix package from Omaha Steaks. Sorry about that, Dean.
It doesn't matter, because all I'm really interested in right now is what's the dirty talk that you're going to have after 12 o'clock.
It's coming up, Dean. See if they'll...
During the break, I canceled my flight.
Oh, you did?
So I don't want to leave without hearing the dirty talk.
Ask if they'll pipe it into the airport. I bet they'll do it.
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, they'll
That's
do
a
it.
Good idea.
They'll do it.
All right.
All right. A couple of big movies coming out this weekend. Please, let's start with Dark Phoenix. What do you know about Dark Phoenix?
I know that it's pretty awful. That much I know. I don't know if I'm just so sick of these movies.
Yeah.
It's not. It's not that I'm just so sick of these movies, even though I am. It's just that this is made so lazily and sloppily that it's just completely boring. It's the X-Men, the saga, the mutants who have special powers, and two factions of mutants. Some want to live peacefully with the humans, and some do not. They fight the humans. They fight each other. This one is centered around the Jean Grey character, who is in a cosmic blast, and you know how painful those
can
be.
They're the
worst. Any kind of cosmic. The cosmic blasts are the worst blasts of them all.
Agreed.
Anybody knows that.
Yep.
And if you happen to be a mutant, in this case, it intensifies her powers. And
it also messes with your sinuses, doesn't it, Dean?
You can't even imagine the kind of post-nasal drip that you can get from a cosmic blast reaction.
Yep.
That's maybe that's why she was so disturbed and
irritable
on this destructive path. That's kind of what this movie is about. But it's just one nonsensical battle after another. I couldn't have been less interested in any of the storyline. It's just a bad rehash of so many other X-Men movies that have come along that have been so much better and told so many better stories. These X-Men movies have been out now for like 20 years.
Yeah.
There have been 12 X-Men movies. And if they're going to continue like this one, Dark Phoenix, I hope this is the last, because they have definitely run out of gas.
Horrible.
With this movie. I don't know if it's just because Avengers now has come out, and that set such a high bar for these kinds of movies. But Dark Phoenix was a huge disappointment. Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones is in it. Jessica Chastain's in it. Michael Fassbender is in it.
Good cast.
James McAvoy.
Yeah.
All except, I might point out, all except for Jessica Chastain, all non-Americans.
Mm.
And that, yeah.
So, we're on to something. What is Dean's list for Dark Phoenix?
Dean's list, C-.
Ah, disappointing.
Yeah.
Secret Life C-. of Pets Very... 2, Dean?
That's right. There, a couple of years ago, they had this movie that, a little animated movie about what your pets do, your cats, your dogs, birds, hamsters, all of your little furry and feathered friends, and what they do when you're not home. Kind of cute. And this movie kind of picks up where that left off with a variety of different plot lines in the movie. But it's, centered around, again, a building, loaded with pets and what they do when practically no humans in the movie. It's almost all animals and, what happens to them when nobody's around. It's very cute. It's mostly preteen. A lot of these animated movies, the adults can go along and also have a good time. You might be a little bit bored if you're an adult this time, but I think the kids are going to find it kind of cute. I give it a Dean's List C+.
All right, a little bit better. And then finally, Pavarotti. Yeah.
Pavarotti is a documentary that is done by Oscar-winning director Ron Howard. And if somebody told me when I was watching little Opie Taylor and little Richie Cunningham that one day he would direct a documentary on arguably the greatest opera singer of all time, or at least probably the best known by a mass audience, I would have laughed in their face, plain old laughed in their face. But that's what Ron Howard has done. He has taken not only the performances, but also this very interesting and multifaceted personality, full of life, full of dimension, and told his story, not only from Pavarotti's viewpoint and his performances in the early start of his career and his family life, and a very candid look at his infidelities with his family. It's kind of a warts and all look at this man. But he's presented it also with a perspective by other performers from the opera world, most notably, I guess, Placido Domingo, with whom Pavarotti performed many times with the great tenors performances, but also from guys like Bono, who appreciated what Pavarotti did and what he was able to contribute to music. It's a very interesting look at this guy, who probably more than any other opera singer was able to crack through the mainstream screen and make opera a little more accessible to the average person. So I kind of like this movie. It's a documentary. It is what it is. But it's I thought it was a very interesting one. I enjoyed hearing his music again. I used to see him when he would be on PBS or like specials. Or, every once in a while, it was very fun, very pleasurable to hear his incredible music being performed again.
And your Dean's List?
I gave it a Dean's List. Dean's List B+.
Oh, that's excellent. Wow. That's very, very good.
Yeah.
Let me ask you.
I like it because I'm a classy guy. That's why.
Well, obviously. Let me ask you and Wendy a Luciano Pavarotti trivia question. When they were trying to make him more accessible to Americans and the American public, they had him star in a romantic comedy. Do you remember the name of that movie?
I do not.
Tommy Boy?
No.
How great. How great would that have been?
That would have been stellar.
If he beat out Chris Farley for Tommy Boy, that would have been fun.
If he got the Farley role in Tommy Boy, that would have been so great. What was it?
In the early 1980s, he starred in a movie called Yes, Giorgio, which was a romantic comedy that nobody saw. Okay.
Evidently, you did.
I saw it. Yeah. I was the only guy who saw it. I got to thank you, Carl.
At least Wendy and I didn't. Yeah.
No, you guys spared
yourself.
We're
proud not to know the answer to that.
Yeah, you should be.
You know what? Speaking of pop culture like this, in the context of this conversation, when you hear Pavarotti performing many of these famous and classic operatic songs, I can't even tell you the number of times while I was watching this movie that I said, oh, I remember that from Bugs Bunny. I remember that song from Bugs Bunny. And I realized that most everything I know about high culture and opera in particular,
Bugs Bunny,
classical music, I learned from the Bugs Bunny cartoon.
That's so funny.
Perfect.
Because I'm a classy guy like
that. Obviously you are a classy guy.
Safe travels.
You have a very safe trip. We'll talk to you in a week.
All right. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Bye, Dean. It's Dean Richards.
You know, we have to congratulate someone, Bill.
Who's our winner?
You were not supposed to give stuff away,
no,
but you did.
No, I was not.
Jennifer from Crystal Lake walks away with the Father's Day Steak Fix package from Omaha Steaks. What's in there?
It includes 2 tender filet mignons, 2 bold top sirloins, 4 Omaha Steaks burgers, and a whole lot more. Just go to omahasteaks.com, type my name, Bill, in the search bar, and add the Father's Day Steak Fix package to your card. It's only $59.99, so congratulations for winning. I'm going to try to do this again tomorrow, Wendy. I'm not supposed to, but I'm going to try to.
I think you should make people work a little harder for it tomorrow.
Maybe, yeah. All right. I can do that. All right.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Coming up, do we do this here or no? Yes, coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings. He is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.